but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
One of the hottest stories in college football, the California Golden Bears. Cal 3-0, riding a three-game win streak. Jaron Chiave Sagapulitelli, their quarterback, JKS, they call him. He has been fantastic, true freshman quarterback. They've got a lot of coaching on the offensive side of the ball that they didn't have before. Justin Wilcox, who's a really good defensive coach, head coach there at Cal, brought in Brian Harsin, brought in Nick Rolovich. Harsin's calling the plays. Rolovich is an offensive consultant. Cal looks much better. They travel this Saturday night to San Diego State. And here's a guest I've been trying to get on for a long time. Sean Lewis, head coach, San Diego State, formerly the offensive coordinator at Colorado, where he worked with Coach Prime and Shedeur Sanders. Sean Lewis joining us fresh off the practice field. How you doing, Coach?
John, how we doing?
Give us an idea what a bye week is like, or a week off. It's not really a week off, is it, when you're coaching football?
Yeah, not really a week off, John. Pleasure to be on with you. But we're doing good. Obviously, you know, use the bye week to, you know, kind of get back to some of our basic fundamentals and get some advanced prep work on Cal. Staff and myself went out, did some recruiting and everything. So kind of a unique experience. For the first time, I got to bring my son on the road recruiting with me to a high school game. So that was neat. And one of the advantages of being down here in San Diego County with so much good football that obviously just a drive time from my home for the game that I attended and everything. So was able to do that quickly. And we're back at it here as we get ripping and running, you know, for a really good Cal opponent that's coming in this week.
Yeah, I saw them against Oregon State. The true freshman quarterback looks not like a true freshman. What do you see on tape when you look at him?
Yeah, I mean, mature beyond his years, you can tell. And I'm always just impressed. It seems like the advancement of the quarterback position in particular with the training that these guys are getting at the high school level and with the 7-on-7 work that they're doing, you know, his ability to process, read defenses, work through his progression and get the ball out of his hand on time and on target is really, really impressive.
Let's talk about that, drill down a little bit, because you do see guys who are working with coaches on the side. I know Steve Clarkson does some camps and some others. So what are these guys getting that maybe quarterbacks weren't getting before?
You know, I think it's probably an advanced knowledge of, you know, coverages, concepts, how to read them, how to match and marry their footwork so that they're throwing in rhythm. And then I think just the overall, you know, body sequencing and mechanics of the throwing motion are more refined because of the special technical aspect of the private coaches. If you're married with the right guy, and you're getting the proper coaching, you know, there's obviously a benefit to that, where if you can have your sequencing down, if you can have your footwork and your arm action in the proper arm slot repeatedly, and you're making, you know, higher quality throws quicker and at a younger age, then you get more high quality reps that get accumulated faster, I think, which then allow you to play at a higher level, you know, sooner when you reach the college game.
This is an unprecedented time, and I think it's in a particularly tough time for coaches who are taking over programs. You just did that. You've been through that. I think Trent Bray at Oregon State's going through it. Washington State's going through it. We watched Brett Brennan at Arizona, Jed Fish at Washington, Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like how different it is right now? Because I don't think there's a blueprint for, you know, hey, you come in, you take over a program. There's just, it's a moving target now. There are new challenges. What has that been like?
Yeah, it's a unique challenge. And you know what you need to get done. However, I think at each one of those institutions that you just mentioned in San Diego State, like how you get those things done is probably wildly different, right? Like based off the university that you're at, based off the conference that you're in, you know, there's different layers to the problem solving process that you have to go through, even though you know, like, all right, this is the end result that needs to happen. Like, I got to get this kid out of the portal, get him admitted. But how does that happen at my university? Mm-hmm. Who are the people that are actually going to make that happen, right? And so even though how you solve each problem that may look different at each place, I think still ultimately, John, it comes down to how you care for your people and how you serve your people and ultimately, right, like pour into each individual person, because all of us, no matter what scheme we're running, what conference we're doing it in, or how we're operating, right, like we're still in the business of caring for young men. And if you care for the young person, you help them grow, you help them mature, they're comfortable, they're confident within the framework of your program that you're building, then the execution and the results that we're all hoping for and that we're all chasing for, then that comes. You know, I think if we get that backwards and it becomes too transactional, then it's not sustainable, right? And we want to build something that is consistently, you know, sustainable over time and not just a flash in the pan, one and done deal, but that year in and year out, right here at San Diego State, we're competing at a high level and we're doing that consistently and not just, you know, seeing occasional greatness every now and again.
The new world Pac-12 will start in a year, but kids are focused on, you know, what can I do this year? Are you able to yet talk to recruits and do you see some traction there, or how receptive are they to the idea of this, what this new conference will be, or is that even on their radar right now?
Yeah, I mean, for the high school kids in particular, it's definitely top of mind, right? And we've talked a ton about it. I mean, too, going all the way back to when we were hosting, you know, unofficial visits in the wintertime and through spring ball, and then when we got to official visit season, it's been instrumental for us to speak to how we're going to the Pac-12, how this class, which right now of all the members that are going to the Pac-12 that we have committed to us, is the number one, you know, ranked class of all those institutions. And we got to do a great job getting all of them across the finish line and getting them all signed. But it was a big piece of the conversation. It was a big piece of the sell with the stage and, you know, the spotlight that's going to be on us, right? And how they're the class that's going to usher us into the Pac-12. And I think that excited a lot of people. And then being able to do that great work with great people here in San Diego has really positioned us in a good spot.
Sean Lewis with us, San Diego State head coach. You've worked a number of places. You know, I have a lot of listeners and readers who kind of want to know what your experience at Colorado was like in the reality television world of college football. And how was that to be on the inside of what was happening with Coach Prime and Shador? And you were working directly with Shador.
Yeah, tremendous opportunity and led me here to San Diego State. You know, so thankful for that. Thankful for the opportunity. Was amazing to work with generational talents and obviously a legendary, you know, individual in Coach Sanders. And because of all that, you know, very, very fortunate to have this opportunity to be speaking with you as the head coach at San Diego State University.
Can you take things like I've worked at 6 different newspapers and I think I learned things everywhere, and I wouldn't take all of what I learned from any of those places, but can you take things from your different stops? Like when you go to talk to people about who you are now as the coach at San Diego State, how much do you look back and go, okay, I took this from this experience, that from that experience? You're kind of this amalgam of where you've been.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you are truly green and growing and, you know, have a learner's mindset, I think all of us do that, right? So from your 6 different newspapers, me, whether it was a coaching at the high school level, coaching at Division II level, coaching at the FCS level, ACC, the MAC, the Big 12, and now obviously the Mountain West, like not only each spot taught me something, but again, I go back to the people. I mean, I've been very fortunate to where guys have been a part of staffs or my staff, right, to where, I mean, the outside linebacker coach for the Rams was on my staff at Kent State, Joe Coniglio. The secondary coach for the Falcons and Justin Hood was on my staff at Kent State. The offensive coordinator for the Texans, we worked together as first full-time coaches at Eastern Illinois, right? So you learn from them. You learn from their approaches. You take the things that you feel can enhance your own skills, right? And, again, when you're around elite people, it kind of makes you – you know, refine your process, right? And you have to elevate when you're around those people and in those places as well, right? So I would like to think and truly believe that I'm not the same coach that I am today than I was, you know, 5 years ago, a decade ago, because of the places and the people that I've been at or that I've been around.
You played quarterback in high school. If we go back to Harold Richards High School in Oaklawn, Illinois, you were the school's career passing leader, 39 touchdown passes in three seasons, a little bit of a dual threat guy, 900 yards on the ground, 15 touchdowns. Could Sean Lewis, the player, have played for Sean Lewis, the coach?
I probably would have recruited him as a big athlete the way that Coach Alvarez recruited me as a big athlete.
Right.
And at the end of the day, probably would have found a spot. I don't know if it would have been in the quarterback room when all was said and done, but I would like to think that, you know, younger I really enjoyed the game and would have found a way on the field the way that I did for the Badgers back in the day.
Yeah, and then correct me if I'm wrong. So you graduate at Wisconsin, and then do you go to work as a gym trainer, like a personal trainer, or what were you doing?
Yeah, I mean, right, like figuring it out the way that we all are, John, the way that I still am trying to figure it out, right? Like,
right.
I think that's one thing that all of us are doing as the world continues to evolve, right? You're just trying to, figure it out and make it work for your loved ones and for yourself. So, yeah, when I graduated, right, it was always like, hey, go get a degree. Like, all right, cool, got the degree. Now what? It's like, oh, well, go get a job. You got bills to pay. So, all right, well, let's figure that out. And, had a couple odd jobs there early on. One was a personal trainer in the Chicagoland area, was an in-school suspension supervisor, sold some office supplies, you know, tended some bar, did a lot of different things. And then, you know, fell in love with obviously coaching and helping people change in their lives. And probably that personal training gig was kind of the first taste of that, right? Like helping people, you know, make some changes, you know, develop some good habits, and you help them, you know, through that process. And it's kind of cool to share your knowledge and help some people grow in that regard. And that's really all we're trying to do as coaches at the end of the day.
I got to think you look at the office in Dunder Mifflin and think, like, you know, that you lived a little bit of that life. Selling office supplies.
Yeah, a little bit. Some reams of paper and some toner. I've forgotten quite a bit about that. But at one point in time, I knew way more than I needed to know.
All right. You've got Cal. They've got Brian Harsin and Nick Rolovich on that offensive side. Are you seeing their influence on Cal's offensive scheme now that you had a chance to get a bigger sample size? I know Oregon State was, you know, blind to it when they played them in week one. But you know, now you've got some tape.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, right? Like you kind of do some of your advanced prep in the off season, right? We're all early on, week one, week two, you're chasing some ghosts. But, you know, by the time you get to this point where you have a three-game sample size, you can see it coming together. And, yeah, there's a wealth of offensive knowledge and wisdom that they have and how they're formulating the plans. You can tell they're doing a really good job of sharing ideas. And most importantly, I mean, all the information and all the knowledge that Coach Harsin and Coach Rolovich have, they're doing an excellent job of giving it to JKS, right? And he's going out and he's applying, he's operating it, and he's doing it at a really, really high level. So, you know, we got to have an elite week of preparation here because they all have all kinds of momentum that they have earned. Obviously, riding a three-game winning streak, there's all kinds of belief, and we got to do a great job, obviously, with our prep and starting fast here on Saturday night.
All right, Coach, thanks for doing this. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, John, absolutely.
There he goes, Sean Lewis. He is the coach at San Diego State. They have Cal this weekend in a big big matchup. Obviously, Cal riding high, as he mentioned there, and in great position. They do not play Miami. They do not play Clemson. They do not play Florida State. This is the 7:30 game on Saturday night. Cal is at San Diego State. Big one for the Aztecs. Big one for Sean Lewis, who's looking for some traction. He is like Trent Bray, like Brent Brennan, like Kalen DeBoer, like Jed Fish, just trying to get that early traction. And I look back, I think Lewis has coached 14 games at San Diego State and trying to get his feet underneath him. And then also preparing for entry to the New World Pac-12, right, in 2026. It is a moving target what San Diego State is up against. Any coach who's coming in and having a you know, taking over a program that is in transition, and you got the transfer portal, you got NIL, the rules are changing. Can you imagine? I mean, it's hard enough as it is to take over as a coach, but coming in this era, man, it's a lot like parenting. Okay, it's a lot like the youth sports scene that we're all trying to navigate. It's wild, right? Like I was thinking about this over the weekend because the 9-year-old had a soccer game. By the way, it was driving rain. Rain going sideways. What happened? Like, it was sunny on, like, Saturday. It was beautiful. I was working outside a little bit. Saturday, I was like, man, it's all sunny and beautiful. And then all of a sudden, here came Sunday morning, and it was torrential rain. We're out at 9-year-old soccer. I've got an umbrella. I've got a raincoat. Her sister's wearing a parka. And here we go. Here comes fall in Oregon. This whole youth sports thing is out of control. Is it not? I'm not even talking about the industry right now, because the industry itself is an amazing study. Like, you can look around and look at the billions with a B, billions of dollars that are invested in youth sports, the private lessons, the training, the specialization, the travel. If you have a kid who plays club sports, you know it's like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 to travel during the season. It's out of control. The cost of the sports itself, the equipment, out of control. But I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the parents. Parents, I see you. You're like camping at these games. People are setting up tents. They're bringing coolers. They're bringing lawn chairs. They're bringing sleeping bags and rolling them out on the ground. You've got moms who are walking around with water flasks filled with booze, a little bit of wine for your Sunday. Like, people are camping. Like, I'm waiting for at one of these youth soccer games for people to suddenly start roasting marshmallows and weenies and throwing axes and setting up hammocks on the side of the field. You literally are bringing campers to the events. I had my older daughter, when she played volleyball, one of the families had a Winnebago. They would bring that Winnebago to the gym. They park it in the parking lot. And, you know, you got like a home away from home to hang out in between the games. That's how long these days are. I'm watching these moms at youth sports games who have like these portable seats where they, you know, they basically wear it like a backpack, and then they set it up on the seat, and it's got like, you know, a seat warmer on it. It's battery powered. It's got a, you know, it vibrates so it can give you a massage while you're watching your kids' game. And out at the soccer matches, you literally have these little igloo-like structures. Have you seen these things that parents can kind of surround their chair with? They can put a heater inside of it, and you can zip it and unzip it, and that way you have your own little area so you don't have to sit outside. We are out of control is what I am saying. There is a whole nother industry beyond the industry that is focused on sort of the parent experience, the camping experience that accompanies your kids' youth sports game. And look, there's money in this. So there's no secret why you see kind of the evolution of all this stuff. There's absolutely a business that is at play here. The youth sports industry, not just a cottage industry. I mean, this is a booming business with kids playing year-round basketball and lacrosse and soccer and baseball. I can remember the baseball season. My baseball season as a kid was like 18 or 20 games, and then was there an all-star season or not? Like, you had that question. These kids are playing like fall league and winter league and then the regular season. And, you know, they're playing like 162 game schedule by the time they're done with it. And have you seen the cost of the bats? I went into Dick's Sporting Goods and I picked up a couple of the bats on the bat rack, and literally they've got like the sensors on them so you can't walk outside the store with it because they know these bats are like $400 bats. It is out of control. All of it is out of control. But parents, you are the guiltiest of all parties. You are literally camping at these youth soccer games. I am watching you, and you're bringing your wagons. You're bringing your lawn chairs. You're setting up your tents. I don't think we're that far off from somebody setting up like a Traeger barbecue and doing some ribs while the 9-year-olds play soccer. Can you imagine? All right, we've got much more show ahead. We're going to lead you right into the NFL game here. Games, I guess, on Monday Night Football times two on this great Monday. I appreciate everybody who's listening. Good interview with Sean Lewis. You could tell a little bit he was reluctant to talk about his time with Coach Prime and Shador. He's just not going to go there, not going to touch it. Kind of reiterated, I am the coach at San Diego State University. That's his way of like not going full Brian Kelly on me, but just reminding me, hey, I want to talk about my program, my time here. It's fine. I'm still going to ask the question because I think it was probably a reality television show that he could not get away from fast enough. You notice in that first season in Colorado, Coach Prime had His offensive coordinator, Sean Lewis, and his defensive coordinator, Charles Kelly, both ran for the hills at the end of the season. Both of them were like, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm on to other things. And Lewis, to his credit, he ends up at San Diego State, where J.D. Wicker, the athletic director there, obviously saw something in him, is buying into him full throttle. And, you know, but he's got to get some traction. He's 4-10 in 14 games, and here comes Cal on Saturday night. All right, leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. I appreciate those of you out there who make this radio show part of your day. I appreciate those of you who read me at johnconzano.com. The Monday mailbag included a cameo appearance from Mark Cuban. I emailed Mark Cuban. I have over the years. I've stayed in touch with him. But I emailed Mark Cuban and asked him what he thought of Tom Dundon, the Blazers' newest owner. Cuban gave me his answer. It's in the Monday mailbag. Leave it here. You got the BFT.